Good afternoon. This is Fanny Crawford, your Story Hour host on Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. It's a couple minutes before 12 noon, and it's Monday. So you know where you are. You're listening to the Epic Story Hour. Our theme today is Demeter and Persephone and the coming of spring. So we'll be telling a couple versions of the story of Persephone and her mother, Demeter. We have Stash Kielkowski calling in from Pittsburgh to tell a version that he's put together of that story. I'm going to tell the traditional bullfinch mythology version, and then we're going to talk about other possible versions of the Demeter and Persephone story. I'm going to do a little calendar update to start. I hope everybody in our listening audience by now knows that Speak, the storytelling venue that Adam Booth runs here in Shepherdstown, will be starting up again on April 18th. That'll be the first session of season 5. Can you believe it? That storytelling series has been running for 5 years with just a break for a few months every winter. And the first teller of the new season is Antonio Rocha, Brazilian-American mime and storyteller, who will be here at 7:30 p.m. on April 18th at the Shepherdstown Community Center. You do want to get your tickets in advance because I have a feeling that show's going to sell out. You can get tickets by contacting Adam Booth directly at 304-886-9481, or you can go to the website www.speakwv.org. And you might even find out if you go to the website who's up in the months after that. I don't even know the answer to that question. I'm not sure the full roster is up yet, but you can certainly check. Also in April 24th, season 4 of Stories in the Round begins at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown, Maryland at 13245 Searfoss Pike. And I coordinate that series, so you can get your tickets in advance from me at 301-730-1638, or you can email me at fenitsky@hotmail.com. Sorry, fenitsky@hotmail.com. That's F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y. And our first teller for season 4 at Stories in the Round will be Eloise Schottler, coming back again. She hasn't been with us for 3 seasons. She was there for the very first season, and she'll be coming back to tell her new story called Ready to Serve, about the nurses from Johns Hopkins University, from the School of Nursing at Johns Hopkins back during World War I, who were sent overseas by General Pershing to save lives. And some of them got more than they bargained for. You want to hear that story from Eloise. It's an excellent, very interesting tale. And those women were the foremothers of current women in the military. So there are lots of connections to contemporary issues. This coming Sunday, March 26th, I will be telling stories as part of the Unitarian Universalist service at the church. That's at 10:45 in the morning on Sunday the 26th, and I'll be telling stories about John Chapman, Johnny Appleseed, and connections between John Chapman, connections to my family stories, connections to the principles of the Unitarian Church. You may not know this about John Chapman. You probably know that he planted apple trees all over the eastern half of the United States, but he was also an inland waterman. He was a pacifist, a religious eccentric, a vegetarian, and something of a librarian on the American frontier. He brought books and literacy to frontier families. We're going to end that service with a water ceremony to honor John Chapman and the return of spring. Today, Our theme on the Epic Story Hour is springtime, the return of spring, and the story of Persephone and Demeter. And I'm going to start out with the traditional version of that story as recorded by Bulfinch in his mythology. So if you look at Bulfinch's mythology, The Age of Fable, Stories of Gods and Heroes, this is an adaptation of what he has there. You may, if you're familiar with the story, you may also know it as a Roman myth, different names. So bear with me, because you really should hear the older Greek version. We're going to use those words. Persephone was the beloved daughter of the Earth Mother, the goddess Demeter, born of Demeter's union with the greatest of the gods of Olympus, Zeus. One day, in the blossoming of Persephone's young womanhood, she was still a child, really. Persephone was playing in the Vale of Enna by the lake there, surrounded by lush forest, which screens the vale from the harsh rays of the sun, so that the earth there is always verdant and covered with flowers, an idyllic, eternal springtime. Persephone was gathering cream-colored lilies and purple violets and tucking them in the folds of her apron when she was observed by the god of the underworld, the great and mighty Hades. Hades was struck by an arrow from the boy god Eros and fell in love with Persephone on sight, swept her up in his arms and then into his chariot. Persephone, of course, was terrified, cried out in terror for her mother. The flowers she'd been gathering were thrown, tossed into the wind, and scattered where Persephone had just been sitting. Hades struck the earth with his mighty iron staff, opening a great cleft in the earth and loosing the heavy iron reins of his huge black horses. He urged them forward, plunging through the cleft deep to the center of the earth, and then to the underworld. Demeter rushed to the meadow in response to her daughter's cries, but she was too late. She searched the meadow and outward from there till she had crisscrossed the entire world to no avail. And at last, weary and in deep despair, she sat and grieved for her daughter Persephone. 9 days, 9 nights under sunlight, moonlight, falling showers. And in her grief and pain, she cursed the innocent land, ungrateful soil which I have always endowed with fertility and clothed with verdant flowers, nourishing grain. No more shall you enjoy my favors. And over the next 9 days and nights, the cattle died. The plow broke in the furrow. The seed failed. There was too much sun, too little rain. Thistles and brambles were the only growth. But the nymph of the woodland and waterways, Arethusa, had caught a glimpse of Persephone as she traveled in Hades' chariot beneath the earth. And Arethusa bravely knelt before the aggrieved mother goddess. She told Demeter of seeing Persephone alive and well, sad, of course, in the underworld, far from home, in that place of death and eternal darkness, but no longer a frightened child. Persephone, said Arethusa, carried herself as a true daughter of the Earth Mother and the great god Zeus, with queenly bearing. Arethusa begged Demeter to restore the fertility of the land. Blame not this earth. It opened unwillingly, forced by the power of Hades' staff to yield passage for your daughter and Hades himself. Demeter, listening to this story, stood like one stupefied, stunned by this revelation. And then the vision of Persephone trapped in the underworld by Hades roused her to action, and she climbed Mount Olympus, presenting herself to Zeus, begging for his help in saving their daughter. Zeus, high and aloof on mighty Mount Olympus, still kept an eye on the movements of his consorts, his children, and his rival guards. Zeus had no trouble believing that Hades had taken Persephone, but he was never an engaged or protective parent. He resisted intervening on behalf of his daughter. Demeter begged and pleaded, finally softening his heart till he agreed that for the sake of human beings suffering from famine and want of food, from Demeter's curse in Zeus's earthly domain, Persephone would be returned to the world of the living with two stipulations. First, Demeter must remove her curse from the land, return fertility to the world. And second, the traditional decree of the three sister fates must be honored. No one, god or human, could leave the underworld once they had consumed food or drink there. But Demeter assured Zeus that Persephone well knew this and would have eaten nothing. Apollo and Hermes, sons of Zeus and half-brothers to Persephone, were sent to bring her out of the underworld. Faced with these messengers, the decree of Zeus and the report of Demeter's curse upon the earth, Hades, lord of the underworld, agreed in principle to release Persephone, but he had already offered Persephone a persimmon fruit, and she had eaten of the fruit. As a compromise with the three fates, she was allowed to leave Hades for half the year. I said persimmon, I meant pomegranate. Sorry. He had already offered Persephone a pomegranate fruit, and she had eaten five of the tiny seeds. As a compromise with the three fates, she was allowed to leave Hades for half the year to live in the world above. And after the harvest each year, the curse of barrenness returns to the earth, and Persephone again disappears into the underworld until spring comes again. You're listening to Epic Storytelling Hour on Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. This is Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host. We're working on the theme of spring, the transition between light and darkness, and stories of Demeter and Persephone today. You've just heard the traditional version, Bulfinch's mythology version, or an adaptation of that tale as told by Bulfinch, about Persephone's disappearance into the underworld, abducted by Hades himself, and how she managed to come back, how her mother Demeter brought her back with help. But she's only here with us half the year. So on the first day of spring, we know that Persephone has returned to the light, and we know that after the harvest, she will return to the underworld and darkness. I have a poem I'm going to read you, I guess, at this point, about women and the power of women. This is called Before Creation. It's written by a woman named Linda Ford, and I first read it, a long time ago, in a publication called Country Women, that was a book published for women who wanted to farm, women who were farming, collectives of women all over the United States. And this in particular was their international issue. Before Creation by Linda Ford. Women wear black, all over the world because it doesn't show dirt or because their watchdogs don't want them to attract attention or because it's the only color dye that they know how to make or maybe because we are the alchemists and some of us remember and others are beginning to be reminded that the night and the woman are one, filled with the same infinite possibilities. That was a poem about the power of women and the transition between lightness and darkness and how we as women are not always sure where it is we want to go. So we can remind each other. We're celebrating spring and the return of Persephone to the light this afternoon with the help of her mother Demeter and a number of other mythic beings. Sometime later this afternoon, we're going to hear from Stasz Zielkowski, who's going to tell another version of the Persephone and Demeter story. When I was researching for this program, I read a lot about goddesses before Demeter and Persephone, and some of the speculation about the development of these stories centered on the original earth goddess in Paleolithic times and possibly before that, when there was only one goddess. So we're talking about the Assyrians and if we're talking about recorded history, the Assyrians and the Mesopotamian areas. And that goddess, original goddess from that area is called Ishtar. And Inanna, another incarnation. And over time, the scholars think that those goddesses, those stories became fractured. And instead of one feminine divine, there were different goddesses who reigned over different areas of life and death. Before there was Hades and Pluto and the god of the underworld, there was a goddess who ruled the underworld. So this is a brief piece of a poem from Sumerian times before the Assyrians, one of the earliest civilizations known from the Mesopotamian area. And this poem was translated and adapted by Diane Volkstein. And this is just a portion of a very, very long poem. The rebirth of Inanna. From the great above, she opened her ear to the great below. From the great above, the goddess opened her ear to the great below. From the great above, Inanna opened her ear to the great below. She abandoned heaven and earth to descend to the underworld. She abandoned her office of holy priestess of heaven to descend to the underworld. She abandoned her seven temples in her seven cities to descend to the underworld. She placed the crown of the step on her head. She tied the small lapis beads around her neck, let her double strand of beads fall to her breast, and wrapped the royal white robe around her body. She bound the breastplate, called, "Come, man, come," around her chest, slipped the gold ring over her wrist, and took the lapis measuring rod and line in her hand. Inanna set out for the underworld. Ninshubar, her faithful servant, went with her. Inanna turned to Ninshubar and said, "Ninshubar, my constant support, my minister who gives me wise advice, my warrior who fights by my side, I am descending now to the underworld. If I do not return, set up a lament for me by the ruins. Beat the drum for me in the assembly places. Dress yourself in a single garment like a beggar. Go to Naipur to the temple of Enlil. If Enlil, the air god, will not help, go to Ur, to the temple of Nana. If Nana, the moon god, will not help, go to Eridu, to the temple of Father Enki. Father Enki knows the food of life. He knows the water of life. The god of wisdom knows the secrets. Surely he will not let me die. Go now, Ninshapar. Do not forget the words I have commanded you. When Inanna arrived at the outer gates of the underworld, she knocked loudly and cried in a fierce voice, "Open the door, gate people! Open the door, Neti! I alone would enter." Neti, the chief gatekeeper of the underworld, asked, "Who are you?" "I am Inanna, queen of heaven, on my way to the east." "If you are truly Inanna, queen of heaven, on your way to the east, why has your heart led you on the road from which no traveler returns?" "Because my older sister, Ereshkigal, her husband, Gugulana, the bull of heaven, has died. I have come to witness the funeral rites." "Stay here, Inanna. I will speak to my queen. I will give her your message." Neti entered the palace of Ereshkigal, the queen of the underworld, and said, "My queen, a young woman as tall as heaven, as wide as the earth, as strong as the foundations of the city walls, waits outside the palace gates. She has gathered the May, the attributes of civilization. She has prepared herself." When Ereshkigal heard this, she slapped her thigh and bit her lip. She took the matter into her heart and dwelt on it, and then she spoke. "Come, Neti, heed my words. Bolt the seven gates of the underworld, and then one by one open each gate a crack. Let the all-white enter. As Inanna enters, remove her royal garments. Let the holy priestess of heaven enter, bowed low." Neti heeded the words of his queen. He bolted the seven gates of the underworld, and then he opened the outer gate and said, "Come, Inanna, enter." When Inanna entered the first gate, the crown of the step was removed from her head. Inanna asked, "What is this?" She was told, "Quiet, Inanna. The ways of the underworld are perfect. They may not be questioned." When Inanna entered the second gate, her lapis beads were removed from her neck. When she entered the third gate, her double strand of beads was removed from her breast. When she entered the fourth gate, her breastplate, called, "Come, man, come," was removed from her chest. And when she entered the fifth gate, her gold ring was removed from her wrist. When she entered the sixth gate, her lapis measuring rod and line were removed from her hand. When she entered the seventh gate, her royal white robe was removed from her body. At each gate, Inanna asked, "What is this?" At each gate, she was told, "Quiet, Inanna. The ways of the underworld are perfect. They may not be questioned." Naked and bowed low, Inanna entered the throne room. Ereshkigal, the queen of the underworld, rose from her throne. Inanna started toward the throne. The judges of the underworld surrounded her, passing judgment against her. Ereshkigal fastened on Inanna the eye of death. She spoke against her the word of wrath. She uttered against her the cry of guilt. She struck her. Inanna was turned to a corpse, a piece of rotting meat, and hung from a hook on the wall. When after 3 days and three nights Inanna did not return, Ninshubar, her faithful servant, set up a lament for her by the ruins She beat the drum for her in the assembly places. She dressed herself in a single garment like a beggar. Alone, she set out for Naipur, for the temple of the air god. And when she entered the house of the air god, she fell to her knees and cried, "Father Enlil, do not let your daughter be put to death. Do not let your bright silver be covered with the dust of the underworld." Father Enlil answered, "My daughter craved the great above. Iana craved the great below. She who goes to the underworld does not return." Father Enlil would not help. Alone, Nishnabar went to Ur in the temple of the moon god. When she entered the house of the moon god, she fell to her knees and cried, "Father Nana, do not let your daughter be put to death. Do not let your precious lapis be broken into stone for the stoneworker." Father Nana said, "My daughter craved the great above. Inanna craved the great below. She who goes to the dark city stays there." Father Nana would not help. Alone, Ninshubar went to Eridu and the temple of the god of wisdom. When she entered the house of the god of wisdom, she fell to her knees and cried, "O Father Enki, do not let your daughter be put to death. Do not let your fragrant boxwood be broken into wood for the woodcutter." Father Enki said, "What has happened? What has my daughter done? Inanna, queen of all the lands, the holy priestess of heaven, I am troubled. I am grieved." From under his fingernail, Father Enki brought forth dirt. He fashioned that dirt into a kurgara, a creature neither male nor female. From under the fingernail of his other hand, he brought forth dirt. He fashioned the dirt into a galator, a creature neither male nor female. He gave the food of life to the Kurgara. He gave the water of life to the Galator. He said to them, "Enter the gates of the underworld like flies. Eresh Kigal is moaning with the cries of a woman about to give birth. When she cries, 'Oh, oh, my inside,' cry also, 'Oh, oh, your inside,' she will be pleased. She will offer you a gift. Ask only for the corpse that hangs on the hook on the wall." That's an older, darker story even than Persephone and Demeter. It's from the Sumerian religious story cycle tradition. And we're telling that story today because it's probably a precursor of the Demeter and Persephone story. And our theme today is the coming of spring and the coming of Persephone, the goddess who comes back from the underworld to bring us light and spring. Someday in the future, we'll have to do another program about light and dark and how women struggle with that, how all of us struggle with that transition. You're listening to Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, broadcasting from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. We're celebrating spring. We're talking about stories coming up in the spring. I've told you that I'll be telling stories on March 26th, this coming Sunday, as part of the Unitarian Universalist Service in Hagerstown at 13245 Searfoss Pike. The service starts at 10:45 on Sunday, and we'll be celebrating John Chapman, who may have been a man, but he knew a lot about the cycles of the earth. And we're going to have a water ceremony as part of that service and making connections to greater truths that John Chapman, Johnny Appleseed, actually lived in his life from 1802 to 1845, a man of the outdoors. 17, wasn't born in 1802. He was born at the end of the 18th century. I will also be telling stories at a house concert in Chambersburg on April 15th at the home of Larry and Mary Ann Hayes. And if you're interested in coming to that house concert, it's going to be a fairly small gathering. So if you're interested, you should let Larry and Marianne know soon, because I think their living room's going to fill up. They have a big house and a big living room, but still. Their phone number is 717-372-2243. Larry and Marianne Hayes, 717-372-2243. Or Larry and Marianne, 911@gmail.com. They will be hosting a story concert where I will be telling grandma tales, grandma stories from my own family history, as well as more distant connections. And of course, the storytelling series with Adam Booth starts on April 18th here in Shepherdstown. We'll talk about that once more later in the program. But right now, I think we have Stasz Zielkowski calling us by phone.
Hello?
Good afternoon. Is this Stasz Zielkowski?
This is he.
Welcome to Epic Radio. How are you, Stasz?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for agreeing to call in and help us with our theme of Demeter and Persephone this afternoon. What's the weather like
You're
in Pittsburgh? What's the weather like in Pittsburgh?
It's a little overcast where I am.
Not,
but it's not snowing and it's not raining. Which is nice because it's been a messy week here.
Yeah. So it's almost spring near Pittsburgh, huh?
Yes. Yes.
Do you want to do any sort of introduction to your story, or are you just going to jump right in? And let me ask you another question. Do you have time?
I've been listening. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Do you have time when you're finished your telling to chat a bit about the story?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, then.
And before I begin, so you won't be too shocked, I find that I pronounce Demeter differently than you do.
That's fine. Neither one of us is Greek, so we can't pull rank.
Right. Okay. Well, are you ready?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, here we go. And you can hear me clearly?
Yes, you're good.
Good. Okay. There was a time when the earth was always in bloom. Helios, the sun god, provided light and warmth and energy evenly across the planet. Every day was the same. Demeter, the sister of Zeus, was charged with keeping the plants, the crops, the grasses and flowers healthy and ready to bring sustenance and beauty to the people. She was in control of the earth. Demeter's constant companion was her daughter, Persephone. A young woman, beautiful beyond description, and loved dearly by her mother. They were inseparable. One day, Persephone was searching for a perfect narcissus flower for Demeter. She was out of her mother's sight for only a few moments, and their world changed in an instant. Hades, the god of the underworld, had been listening to Persephone's voice for a long time, and had been watching her from deep below the ground. He was smitten by her beauty and desired to have her as his wife. As Persephone leaned down to pick the flower, she felt a resistant force. She pulled harder, and at once the flower was loosened, and a great chasm opened in the ground as a golden chariot pulled by a pair of black horses broke into view. Hades was at the reins. He leaned out and grabbed Persephone, and in an instant, the horses, the chariot, and Hades with Persephone in his arms disappeared into the chasm and descended to the underworld. Demeter heard the sounds and didn't see anything. She ran to see what caused them, but the ground was undisturbed, and there was no evidence of any event. She called to Persephone, and looked for her for hours, but to no avail. For days, Demeter searched for Persephone. Finally, she went to Zeus and asked for his help. His reluctance to even discuss Persephone's disappearance alarmed Demeter. She begged her brother to help her. After all, he was Persephone's father. He, as king of the gods, knew everything. Why was he acting this way? She became angry and demanded her brother's help. Finally, Zeus admitted that Hades had stolen their daughter and taken her to the underworld as his wife, and that he had done this with Zeus's permission. Below, in the underworld, time passed. Persephone was crowned as queen of the underworld. At first, she was very angry. She refused to even acknowledge Hades. But he wore her down with kind words and gestures. Gently, he encouraged her to appreciate her position as the queen of the largest population of beings anywhere. And so, over time, she became fond of Hades and even began to feel a kind of love for him. But she refused to eat anything brought to her, for she knew that consuming any food in the underworld would doom her to stay there forever, and she had not given up hope of returning somehow to her mother, who she missed so desperately. Above ground, the world was changing. Demeter's rage at Zeus took a new form. She stopped caring for the growing things. Crops failed, flowers withered, grasses died, fruits were nowhere to be found. People were starving. Life was ending for the people the gods relied on for tribute. Zeus realized he must do something. He appealed to Demeter to do what she was supposed to do. Instead, she gave him an ultimatum. If he didn't order Hades to release Persephone, she would make it impossible for any growth of living things on the planet forever. Zeus relented and ordered Hades to allow Persephone to leave the underworld. Hades obeyed, but he had a plan. He persuaded Persephone to take a few of the red, juicy seeds of the pomegranate to eat on her voyage to above ground. She was so happy to be on her way to reunite with Demeter that she took them, and she ate them. In a flash, she was above ground, her mother before her with open arms. Demeter hugged her child and then in an excited state asked, "Why are your lips so red?" "There were just four juicy red seeds, mother, from the pomegranate." "Ah, daughter, Hades has tricked you. For each seed you consumed, you must be with him for a month of each year. And then, suddenly, Demeter rent the air with a sound never before heard, a scream of such anger and rage and force that the very earth recoiled. "Persephone," asked her mother, "what did you do?" With a weary smile, Demeter explained that she had tilted the planet so that from this day on, for 8 months of the year, Helios, the sun god, would be providing warmth and light and energy as he had before. But for the month when Persephone must go to the underworld to be with Hades, the golden rays from Helios will fall a different way. The earth will be colder, and there will be little growth. And because Demeter tilted the earth, we now have 8 months of pleasant weather and 4 months of cold, unpleasant days and nights when Persephone has returned to be with Hades in the underworld. And that's my story.
That's wonderful, Stosh. Well, I can tell, I think, exactly where that Stosh's personal version of that story.
Yes.
You brought in some science, didn't you?
Yes, I did bring in science. When I first started telling stories, was because of teaching science.
Yeah.
And many of the stories that I've told in schools, I always try to bring in a science motif or an explanation of people's thinking at the time. I found it interesting that in the ancient Greek world, they believed the planet was flat. They didn't have any concept of the Earth being round. And then at some point before the 3rd century BC, their ideas started to change. And so that's why I had Demeter in my version of the story causing the Earth to tilt from its axis, so that the sun's rays would be at a different angle. And that is the explanation today in science of why we have the difference in the weather throughout the year.
That's a great idea. It's a great way to get kids to remember why the seasons change.
Mm. Yeah. When I was teaching science, it was so hard to have any child believe that people at some time thought the Earth was flat, because the concept of travel is so ingrained with our children. Even the youngest children know about airplanes and boats and all kind of legends that where people travel the Earth. They find it hard to believe that there was a time when people did not go very far from their homeland, and often when they did, they never came back. And that reinforced the idea that they may have fallen off the edge.
If you read social theory and even some economists, people say that the hardest thing to know is what it's like not to know what you know. So to see the world through someone else's eyes who doesn't know what you know, it's one of the hardest tasks.
There's something interesting. Well, I don't want to get off the subject.
I don't know that it's possible not to get off the subject, Sasha.
Okay. Well, I did an interesting thing when I taught astronomy, and for 6 years I ran a planetarium for a private school. I would say to the kids, you know, everybody keeps telling you that the Earth goes around the sun, but it's really not true. Because if we go out in the morning, the sun is here, and I would take the younger students out and point in the sky, and there's the sun, and then in the afternoon classes, I would take them and point, and of course the sun had moved, and they didn't feel any movement, and I would challenge kids to tell me why they think that the Earth went around the sun, and it would cause some great discussion. I would often get questions from parents who'd call me in the evening and say, did you really tell the kids that the sun moved around the Earth? And most of the parents appreciated it with a thought-provoking class rather than telling them an untruth.
But there were some, probably.
Oh, there always were some. There were some. And in high school, my absolute favorite thing to do with kids in order to teach them, to remind them that they have to have faith and authority in order to believe some things. I would challenge them that if they could prove the United States had landed on the moon, I would take them and their family to dinner any place in the country.
Did you get any winners?
No, they can't. It can't be proven.
Wow.
Unless you accept the authority. Unless you accept that, you know, the people at NASA have certain things that can show you and say, yes, and here's proof because of the flights. But still, it relies on a real belief in the authority of some person or group. And so it was necessary, in especially chemistry, to teach people about atoms. the were these little things that made up everything. I have a degree in chemistry, and when I graduated from college, and one day was talking to my father about my studies, he said, "I'm glad you're educated and you have a degree, but don't tell me anything in my armchair is moving." he did not want to talk about that.
Well, I was going to say that you're messing with kids' minds here, Stosh, but well, you were messing with your dad's mind, even though you didn't intend to.
Yes. Well, in my own education, I always liked the teachers who said, "Tell me why you believe what you believe. Prove this to me. Or come up with a reason why you don't believe it. Don't just accept something because I'm bigger than you, or I have a better position than you, or else because I'm the teacher." I always wanted to challenge students to think about what they were willing to accept, or to challenge me and make me do a better job at showing them why things were true.
Well, here's a question directly related to your story that I want to ask you. You just told slightly adapted, I guess, version of Demeter and Persephone, or right. Demeter and Persephone, as you say it. And just before you came on air, I told a story about Ishtar from the Sumerian religious story tradition, who some scholars say was the precursor to Demeter. So she's the original earth goddess, as almost as far back as we can go with written records or tracing back to Mesopotamia. Those earth mother stories. And the biggest difference between the two stories is that Ishtar goes to the underworld of her own volition. She goes to challenge the queen, who is the queen of the underworld, because Ishtar is the queen of heaven, which includes the earth, actually. But her rival is the queen who lives under the earth and brings darkness and death. And in the Persephone story, of course, Persephone is abducted by the Lord of the underworld. So I guess my question is about, as a scientist, how do you think that development progressed, and what did we lose when we went from a more unified version of the world where there can be battles between darkness and light, but it's part of a cosmic cycle, whereas in the story of Persephone and Demeter, this young woman, this young girl is forced below and abducted and is only able to escape because Zeus intercedes on her behalf. That's kind of that's really a big picture question. You can tell me if that's unfair. But I was going to talk about that on my own, but it's so much easier just to put it on you, Stosh.
Right. Well, I am not sure exactly what your question is for me, because I think of the in Persephone's story that there's no way that someone would go to the underworld on purpose, willingly, and that it very much reminds me of a number of stories like The Beauty and the Beast. In many different cultures, there is a story where a young maiden is kidnapped or must take someone's place. In Beauty and the Beast, Beauty takes the place of her father, in servitude to the beast because her father had trespassed on his place, on the beast's castle and lands. And that theme was repeated in a number of stories, and in going through a number of different stories and reading of others, it seems to me that the a version of the Persephone story has kind of leaked into other lands and other languages, and you know, contributed to something like the Beauty and the Beast story.
I've actually read something about that as a theory of where those fairy tales come from. And one of the other things that I was reading is the contrast between this goddess who chooses to go to the underworld, and the shift in culture and worldview that represents compared to, say, the Greek vision, which is, as you say, that no one would willingly choose to go there.
Right.
Of course, there are stories of heroes that go to the underworld for specific purposes also.
Right.
Not necessarily, most often for conquest or to get something else in return. But
it's interesting that the rules change from the stories change a little bit. And in each one of them, someone breaks the rules. Someone figures a way to get around the rules. In the Persephone story, Persephone doesn't eat. And depending on which version you read, she may be there for a short while or a very long time. And she doesn't eat a thing the entire time she's there. And in one version I read, it describes her becoming weak and almost heading towards joining the people that, or the beings that she's the queen of.
Right.
Because
right.
She doesn't consume anything. And in another version, there was no mention of that. It's just the fact that she doesn't eat, because if you eat in the underworld, then you're stuck there forever. And that almost seems like a very modern concept to me. I wish, when I'm learning stories, sometimes I wish I was smart enough to know other languages so I could read it in the original. Because I often think that people who do translations get to a point where they say, I'm not sure what that word is, but maybe it means this. And, with the translations that we read about now of ancient documents that people find, I don't put a lot of weight on translations of something that's 3,000 years old or 2,000 years old, just because I'm skeptical about my own language. I have no language skills.
So which part sounds modern to you? The part that she just didn't eat, or the part that she began to waste away and become like a being of the underworld?
I think that she began to waste away is more realistic, and it would be more realistic in a modern version of it. I mean, I didn't want to make my story today too long, but if I were to work on this some more, I probably would put that in, mention it, because it makes more sense in a modern world.
Right.
The magical things, even though all the Greek myths are magical, in modern storytelling, so many times, I try to give an explanation that leans towards.
Listen, I think we should challenge each other to come up with a modern version of Persephone and Demeter, and then we can come back on air and tell our updated versions of that story.
A 2017 version?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I you know, when I first read your email, I thought, because I'd done a modern version of the story I told about the three men and the woman who, I think I remember this correctly, the three men who went and had all kind of wonderful inventions, and then they tried to save the woman and
yes.
wanted her to marry them.
Right.
And I did a very modern version of that.
Which, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great story.
And I thought about that, but I thought rewriting or writing a brand new story in less than 24 hours is probably not something I'm going to do and go on the radio.
You could do it, but you might be a little exhausted by the end of it. You certainly wouldn't be happy.
But I like your challenge. I think we I think I'm going to do that.
Okay.
I'm going to look into that.
I'm picking up the challenge myself, and we will come back in a few months and tell those stories to each other and to the wide world. I'm going to say goodbye and let you move on with your day. I need to do a couple calendar announcements before we sign off, and we're getting close to the hour. But thank you, Stosh. I loved hearing
you're very welcome.
Your version of the story definitely added to my understanding of the story as it used to was and where it's going in modern times. So thank you
for saying that. And I loved being on the show.
All right. Well, I'll be talking to you as we see more of you in Maryland and West Virginia.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's what I'm doing the rest of the day. I'm getting ready.
All right. Well, give Terry a hug. And
I will.
We'll talk soon.
Okay.
This is Fanny Crawford, your storytelling our host on Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio. I'm going to do a quick calendar update, and then I'm going to sign off for the week. Just a reminder, April 18th, Stories in the Round begins again, Adam Booth's storytelling series at the Shepherdstown Community Building. Antonio Rocha is the storyteller. You can get tickets by going to the website www.speakwv.org. That program is 7:30 in the evening on April 18th. Also coming up April 24th will be the first session of the Stories in the Round series in Hagerstown. And if you're interested in that program, you can contact me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638 or by email at fanitsky@hotmail.com. fanitsky@hotmail.com. You've been listening to the Storytelling Hour on Epic Radio on Eastern Panhandle Community Radio in Shepherdstown. And stay tuned. Don't turn your dial, because we have a recording of Moby Dick coming up in preparation for an interview with a Moby Dick scholar that will be a week from now, is my understanding. So you're in for a treat. Stay tuned. The Epic Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand our own stories. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Talk to you next week. Hope you'll tune in. Monday at 12 noon. Bye-bye.
This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. This reading by Stuart Wills. Moby Dick, or The Whale,